ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Praj Industries Limited's Q2 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to you all. My name is Anuj Sonpal from Valorem Advisors. We represent the investor relations of Praj Industries Limited. On behalf of the company, I'd like to thank you all for participating in the company's earnings call for the second quarter and 6 months ended of financial year 2023. Before we begin, let me mention a short cautionary statement. Some of the statements made in today's con call may be forward-looking in nature. Such forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties which could cause actual results to differ from those anticipated. Such statements are based on management's beliefs as well as assumptions made by and information currently available to management. Audiences are cautioned not to place any undue reliance on these forward-looking statements in making any investment decisions. The purpose of today's earnings call is purely to educate and bring awareness about the company's fundamental business and financial quarter under review. Let me now introduce you to the management participating with us in today's earnings call and hand it over to them for opening remarks. We have with us Mr. Shishir Joshipura, CEO and Managing Director, Mr. Sachin Raole, Chief Financial Officer and Director of Resources. Now, without any further delay, I request Mr. Joshipura to start with his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anuj. Good day, everyone. I welcome you to Praj Industries earnings call for Q2 and H1 FY23. Trust all of you had the opportunity to go through our results presentation for the quarter ended 30th September 2022. It is once again a pleasure to connect with all of you. Let me now briefly take you all through the quarterly business highlights and industry development, following which Sachin will take you through the financials. We close the H1 FY23 on a strong note with a healthy growth in order book and delivery volumes. The challenge around volatile commodity prices, global inflation, supply chain imbalance, though softened, existed throughout the quarter. However, with continued focus on customers combined with our technology progress and increasing favorable business environment, we are able to stay the course. Global economy continued to face headwinds in form of geopolitical situations, high inflation and continued uncertainty and volatility on the energy front in several parts of the world. Energy transition is creating several new opportunities for sustainable fuels, and we are confident of leveraging and delivering to our potential. India's EBP 20 program is marching ahead of its target. There is a clear recognition that biofuels have increasingly important role to play as they address multitude of issues across economic, social and environmental spectrum. Introduction of flex-fuel vehicles, ethanol-driven power generators, diesel blending program, etc. are likely to drive future demand for ethanol beyond EBP 20. Earlier this month, countries saw launch of pilot vehicles on flex-fuel strong hybrid electric concept. This is a solution that will favorably address several dimensions of the ecosystem in future. Recently, the Uttar Pradesh government has issued a comprehensive policy to attract big-ticket investments in biofuels projects and increase agricultural income in the state. This policy aimed at supporting and promoting production of compressed biogas as well as other biofuels in the state. The government has also given the go-ahead to the MSME policy that seeks to open and promote such units in all the districts of the state. Coming to the business updates, our bioenergy business in 21-22 sugar marketing year, India exported almost 11.2 million tons of sugar, which clearly indicates that we have enough sugary feedstock available for ethanol production in a sustainable way. Along with this, availability of starchy and cellulosic feedstock will ensure India can address higher ethanol demand in near future. In domestic market, we continued our strong performance on the order book, and our execution activities are at the optimal levels with multiple project sites in different geographies. On the international front, the U.S. government passed Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, that has significant provisions for support on advancement of biofuels across different modes of mobility. As a result of this development, low-carbon ethanol is likely to emerge as an interesting business opportunity. With announcement of lending mandates in Canada and Mexico, our market development activities are finding good traction for lead generation in these markets. Our first project in Brazil is on schedule for commissioning at the end of this year. Our service business is receiving positive response from customers for combination of operation and maintenance and performance enhancer offerings. During our trials at few select plants in Brazil, we have successfully demonstrated performance of our PE solutions. On the 2G front, our plant at IOCL Panipat was unveiled by the Honorable Prime Minister in August 22. This plant will benefit more than 100,000 farmers and is expected to create around 1,500 jobs for rural youth. 2G ethanol has high potential to displace GHG emissions, higher potential to displace GHG emissions compared to 1G. This plant alone will help eliminate around 320,000 metric tons of CO2 every year, which is equivalent to replacing 63,000 cars on road annually. 2G plants will address the serious concerns arising due to stubble burning. The success of this project will pave way for many projects in domestic as well as international markets. On international front, discussions are progressing favorably for establishing 2G plants in Europe. With Russia-Ukraine war and energy crisis in Europe, it will further propel need for 2G ethanol, which is the most sustainable fuel alternative. Earlier this month, International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, announced that ICAO member states have adopted a collective long-term global aspirational goal of net zero carbon emissions by 2050. This will give further boost to demand for SAF. In September, I had an opportunity to attend Global Clean Energy Action Forum organized by the U.S. Department of Energy in Pittsburgh. It was widely attended by different ministers, government officials, and global CEOs. Organizations across the globe may speak different languages, practice diverse cultures, but it was heartening to see everyone talking in unison about clean energy with zero emissions. On the CBG front, customers are now seeking solutions for different varieties of agriculture residues. Our R&D is working on a program to find optimal solutions for addressing this need. After conducting extensive trial at our demonstration plant, we are integrating our learning to enhance scope and performance of our solutions in the field. On the CPES front, the energy transition phenomena is driving development of blue and green hydrogen projects across the globe, creating interesting business opportunities for this business. Our ability to modularize engineering solutions across the technology platform is helping us to create significant competitive advantage. Our additional capacity at Kandla is now fully operational, and we are exploring further capacity enhancements. On the brewery front, the beer consumption levels have crossed the pre-pandemic levels, and we are now experiencing healthy flow of inquiries from India as well as Africa. The new capacity formation is expected to catch up speed in the latter part of FY23. Our zero liquid discharge business, we see good business potential mainly from the private sector players and expect few important contracts to be concluded in second half of the year. On PHS business front, our strategy of focusing on high capacity fermenter space is receiving positive response from customers as this enables us to offer enhanced suite of solutions to pharma industry. PHS is also witnessing increasing traction in international markets with very healthy inquiry inflow. On the renewable chemicals and materials front, Praj has entered into an MOU with ICT to establish Center of Excellence and Innovation for biopolymers. This center will undertake research, promote academic pursuit, and explore newer applications, including developing biodegradable plastic as a solution to curb the plastic menace. Before I end, I would like to share with you a couple of awards that we won recently. Praj received CAP 2.0 award from CII for contributions in the climate action initiatives. Several different industry organizations such as Indo-American Chamber of Commerce, Renewable Energy India, and Manufacturing Today honored our founder chairman, Dr. Pramod Chaudhary, with recognitions for his contributions to trade and business and sustainability initiatives. With this, I now hand over to Sachin for his comments on the financial performance.
Thank you, Shishir. Good day, everyone. Let me take you through the financial highlights for the quarter and half-year ended September 30, 2022. The consolidated income from operations stood at ₹876.58 crore in Q2 FY23 as compared to ₹532.41 crore in Q2 FY22. PBT has increased by 40.6% and stood at rupees 65.78 crore in Q2 FY23 as compared to 46.77 crore in Q2 FY22. Similarly, profit after tax stood at rupees 48.13 crore in Q2 FY23 as compared to 33.34 crore in Q2 FY22. For H1 FY23, income from operations was rupees 1,606.45 crore as against rupees 918.67 crore in H1 FY22. PBT stood at rupees 120 crore in H1 FY22 as against HY23 as against 76.57 in H1 FY22. PAT of rupees 89.39 crore in H1 FY23 as against 55.54 crore in H1 FY22. Export revenues accounted for 17%. Of the total revenue, 74.7% is from bioenergy, 19.5% from engineering, and 5.7% is from PHS business. The order intake during the quarter was 981 crore, with almost 93% from the domestic market. Of the total order intake, 85% came from bioenergy, 10.8% from engineering, and balance from PHS business. The order backlog as of September 2022 is at rupees 3,346 crore, comprising of 87.5% from domestic orders. Cash in hand on September 30th is 514 crores. I now conclude my remarks and I would like to thank you all for joining us on this call. We would now be happy to discuss any questions, comments or suggestions you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Dhananjay Bagrodia from Ask Investment Managers Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Is it audible?
Please proceed.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, please proceed.
So, what explains the difference between standalone PBT of 82 crores versus consolidated PBT of 65 crores?
Dhananjay, we can't hear you.
So, what explains the difference between standalone PBT of 82 crores versus consolidated PBT of 65 crores?
In other income, we have 20 crores dividend income coming from the subsidiary company. It is standing in our standalone results, but in consolidated, the 20 crore naturally gets knocked off. That's
okay.
Why the consolidated PBT looks lower than standalone.
Okay. Okay. And so our operating cash flows come negative this quarter because of higher receivables. Any comments on that?
More than higher receivables, actually, we have gone ahead with the increased inventory.
Okay.
The stand which we have taken in last two quarters that we will go for very calculated inventory accumulation on the commodity prices side. That's what has resulted into our inventory going up more than the receivable. Receivable number of days are absolutely flattish as compared to last quarter. This phenomena of increased working capital is mainly on account of inventory pile up.
Okay. And so lastly, regarding our payables have reduced, are we losing bargaining power with suppliers due to dependence on them now?
Sorry, payables are reduced, that's right.
Payables, are we losing bargaining power with suppliers due to dependence on them?
So, no, there are various means and methodologies in which we are using the cash on our balance sheet. When we have any negotiation happening with the vendors, we also go for early payment with the cash discount for that matter. So
okay.
These are the 3-4 measures which we had taken to counter the commodity price increase. One of them was to make the early payment for payables and go for the cash discount.
Okay. Okay, sure. And so lastly, regarding your margin, is not improving despite falling RM. Is there anything which you could read into that? Because our margins have been the lowest this quarter.
So, if you look at even the composition of our sales is majorly, or why majorly, it's almost tilted towards the domestic sales. Domestic sales, we have even the APC component. It is not only A and B component, but C component is also really plays a role there.
Okay.
And that component naturally carries little margin as compared to your supply component, one aspect. Second aspect, if you look at traditionally, when our exports are more than 25 or 30%, our margins are very different. But today our export sales, as I already mentioned, are not in tandem with the growth which we are seeing in the domestic market. They are good. They are definitely better, but they are not running in equal speed with the domestic number. And that's the reason why this blended margin looks less. Otherwise, of course, there is a component of commodity prices which we are continuously saying that we will see this impact continuing at least in H1. And that's what has happened to some extent. It is coming down, but it has not completely gone away.
Okay.
So these are the two major reasons.
Sure, I'll come back for later for more questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to answer questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shailesh Kanani from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. So first of all, congratulations for clocking, I think, all-time high quarterly revenues. So my question is with respect to ethanol current capacity, current production capacity. As per you, what is the current capacity on India domestic basis? What is the capacity we are having on ethanol production?
So, Shailesh, very clearly, the government has said that there is now a 10% blending that has been achieved in the country. So from the capacity perspective, I think that's where we are. We need to go to 20%. So we are at halfway mark as far as capacity is concerned in terms of what is required.
So in last we checked, I think we were at 850 crore liters, right? And ordering of further 300 or 400 crores was already tendered. So I just wanted to know the opportunity pending on the order pipeline.
Correct. So as we had said last time as well, that when the EBP 20 program started, we had roughly estimated that 1,000 crore liter we need to get added. And we had said that we are at halfway mark on that. Right.
So just to get some numbers, like last time, I think the interaction said that we were at 1,800 to 1,900 crores would be the potential capacity requirement to produce something in the range of 1,400 crores liters, right? For E20, where 1,000 crores will go from blending and...
Correct.
So just wanted to know...
If you're looking for the straightforward number, based on what is the current capacity already created and ordered, and what is the balance.
Right.
Balance will be in some way in a range of 500 to 600 crores, which we saw at the beginning of this year. Something has got ordered during this quarter. So still, I believe that balance capacity creation should be in the range of 500 crore of liters.
Okay. So I just wanted to see, tell how many more quarters we can see good amount of traction on that front. Okay. So that answers that question. And just on your opening remarks, Karan mentioned that post E20 as well, we are seeing opportunity coming up. Right. So two questions on that front. Till what level to see that kind of opportunity, or what capacity you see over there, and also on the feedstock availability front. Both of them will become happen.
Correct. So as I said, that applications will change. So right now it's very simple, plain vanilla, 20% blending, all vehicles on the road that run on petrol kind of market segment. But if you start looking a little differently, and let me start. So we just saw the first flexible vehicle, which was also strong hybrid connection, so which we believe is an ideal solution for India, was launched just last week by an auto company. So that is a very positive development. So flexible vehicles will drive demand, because then it's no longer limited 20%, and it can go all the way up to 85%. So that's the first answer to you. Second, we have talked about the stationary. And I'm not talking about stationary, what we call GE sets in the country, switching over to a more sustainable form of fuel, which is ethanol. That's the second one. third application that is likely to emerge would be about the application on mobile diesel engines, and that's where one is the railway is one segment and the vehicles, automotive is another segment. So there are several other avenues. There may even be in future a development around the sustainable aviation fuel. So several avenues will open based on application. There's telecom towers, DGs, there are many, many of those which are currently running on diesel, but they can very sustainably shift to ethanol. And I think one is the EBP 20 program, but all of these will also start to drive, and the numbers one need to compute, exact numbers when we can probably connect back with you on that one. But that's an opportunity is even bigger in size.
Aren't there any question marks on the feedstock availability? I understand last 2 years have been bumper, and this year also it is expected to be a bumper on the sugar production side. But overall, in general, do we have that kind of availability of feedstock on a sustainable basis?
Yes, I think you picked the point that I made around excessive sugar production and export, etc. So that's very clearly one feedstock availability indicator to all of us that is adequate, number one. Number two, the bigger and actually the biggest opportunity is going to be the lignocellulosic feedstocks, which is why we are so positively looking forward to commissioning and handing over of the IOCL project, because that will prove beyond any doubt that that's the feedstock to stay. Currently, there is no use of that. We just burn it off, right? So there is a huge amount. So I don't think we have a currently any worries around feedstock availability. There's enough and more. Of course, work will have to continue to find different feedstocks and their usage as we move forward. But right now, I don't think that's the challenge at all.
Okay, sir. So last question, if I can make this in.
Sorry to interrupt.
Oh,
I would request you to end the queue, sir.
Sure. Thanks.
The next question is from the line of Ravi Dharamshi from ValueQuest Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to check on the CBG. Are we starting to see any kind of traction on the ordering front?
We are beginning to see some activity developing. As I mentioned, the policy, very, very supportive policy that came out from UP government is just about 2 weeks old. So we will maybe a little later in the time we will be able to answer this question in a more affirmative way. But we are clearly beginning to see activities beginning to develop in that space.
So there were some issues regarding the supply chain. Those have been sorted out. Policy-wise, supply chain-wise, financing-wise, everything is in place, and ordering is the only thing left. Is there still something that we need to get right?
No. So. So supply chains are very local issues in this case, so it depends on where the location is very clearly. On the funding, there is a provision that's made available to fund these projects, but as not many projects have come up, and that's the key point. So obviously some more ironing out is required on offtake, etc. But in general, the environment for setting up of an ecosystem involving CBG plants is becoming increasingly more favorable.
Got it. And just one last follow-up from my end. On the margin front, of course, you gave a good explanation of the domestic and exports mix, but just to understand, the steel prices have fallen almost 60% from the top, and also our gross margins, which had used to be much higher earlier. So, and you have earlier guided that this year we are likely to double digit. So just wanted to check, first half almost gone and we are still stuck at sub 8% kind of margin. Will we be able to still stick to 10% plus kind of margins guidance?
So we are not giving any guidance on what the next mechanism looks like, except to tell you that A, we believe that the highly volatile commodity price changes that we saw are hopefully behind us. And that should have a clear bearings on what we do forward. Although there will be some, as you can see, this is at about 1,000 crore odd level, so we still have some residual impact left that we will see as we travel through the year. Sachin was also mentioning around improving the mix, which will also lead to improvement in margin. So as we move forward, we have said in the past that we expect the H2 to get better, and that's where we stay.
Okay, thanks. I'll get back in the queue. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikram Suryavanshi from Philip Capital India Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congratulations for good growth. What we are looking at is that how or when we can see the pickup in export given the geopolitical situation, because I know we are doing extremely well in domestic market, but I think probably export is the area where we can also do much better, and how we can see pickup in that area. That is my first question. And the second on bio-CNG side, now I think environment is quite conducive in terms of not only CBG prices, but even byproduct prices also. So is that helping to really see the ground level pickup, or how is your heading on opportunity?
So, Vikram, on the export side, I think your observation is bang on. So we, as we had mentioned, that we expect the second half at least to start changing on the order booking side, and probably that will reflect as we travel through the few next 4 to 6 quarters in terms of sales as well. But we first obviously, so already as Sachin was mentioning, it's not that our order book is low, it's just that the domestic is very, it's progressing at a very different speed. Having said that, we are also cognizant of the fact that we need to increase the speed of our international order book, and that's what we are focused on, and we expect that H2 will be different than H1. So that's just, I hope that answers your question.
Second on this CBG side.
So on the CBG front, yes, there is still, as I said, there's still some last mile connectivity issues to be settled in terms of pricing point for byproducts, offtake agreements, and policies for fertilizers, because that's an important byproduct out of a CBG plant. On the gas pricing side, I think a lot has been done, but some of these interconnected, as I call them, the last mile connectivity issues, they still need to get addressed. State of UP has tried to address some of these, though not all. And I think, as I said, as we move forward, we expect to see a more favorable environment in which to come. So maybe next quarter we can talk around this. This is a bit too early.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Isha Agarwal from VT Capital. Please go ahead. Ms. Isha, I have unmuted your line. Kindly proceed with your question.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. So my question is regarding the biosphere tech. Can you help me understand what's the update and how people are adopting it, especially the sugar companies? Are we seeing any demand coming from them? Hello?
So we cannot hear you. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay connected while I try to reconnect the management. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. The line of the management has been connected. So kindly proceed.
Yes, Isha, could you please repeat your question?
Yes, sir.
Sorry for that drop,
So my question was regarding the biofuel tech. So just wanted to understand how are we seeing the sugar companies adopting the decent tech? Are we seeing any good demand coming up for this biosyrup tech?
So, Esha, biosyrup, when we developed the biosyrup technology, it was with the purpose to demonstrate that syrup can become a sustainable feedstock that can enable a small plant connected to a sugar mill to run right through the year and not be dependent on seasons change, right? So that was the purpose of demonstration of the technology. Obviously, there are some other dynamics which still have to be resolved in terms of establishment of biosyrup as a feedstock, the storage system infrastructure for that, also the dynamics in the sugar market that decide whether we want to produce sugar or we don't want to produce sugar. So there are many other dimensions that also have to play. So our purpose was to demonstrate that the technology is available. When the factors align themselves, this is an option that the customers can offer just the way they are today offering, or say, molasses B2 juice or anything like that. This is another feedstock that is available.
Hello?
Miss Isha, we couldn't hear you. Can you please repeat?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, so my next question was regarding the 2G plant. So just wanted to understand the rationale. Like, for setting up a 2G plant, if the cost is double, then why would somebody opt for going for a 2G plant setup rather than 1G plant? And also, just wanted to understand if the prices for 2G ethanol is set by the government or it is set by the OMC.
Okay, so second question first. There is no notification as yet on 2G ethanol prices, so we don't know as to what the prices are going to look like and what mechanism will come into play. That is number one. Okay. Number two, why would somebody want to put up a 2G plant? So there are three or four dimensions. First and foremost, that the 2G technology actually reduces emissions of CO2 by over 85%. That's not possible for a 1G technology to do, because obviously it is limited, has its own inherent limitations. So that's number one. Number two, availability of the feedstock. That is a question that was also previously asked by one of your colleagues. We have to understand that what is the problem that we are trying to solve. Purpose of technology would be to what? So, for example, if double burning is a problem we are trying to solve, this is one way to solve it. If we want to address the CO2 emission, ethanol is the way to solve it, right? And 85% reduction in GHG emission is a very definitive way of solving it. Tomorrow, when aviation fuel starts to become the norm of the day, the airlines will look for a very low carbon intensity fuel to be put into their wings, right? And if that happens, then obviously at that time, this is the only solution, because this is the way it will grow. Next one, this also provides an outlet for farmers to not to burn their standing residues of a crop, but actually realize money out of it. So different strokes, different goals, but there are very different set of reasons as to why 2G plants will come up, because what we are not factoring in when we look at only the current one investment perspective, what you said is correct. It is high investment, but what we are not looking at is the farmer's income doubles, the calamity of climate, the amount of health costs that we have to bear. Now, it just so happens that different stakeholders are bearing this cost, and that's why we need an enabling policy environment that sort of brings everybody on the same platform, and I think we are moving in that direction, not only here, but also outside in the rest of the world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Isha.
The next question is from the line of Dixit Mittal from LIC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yes. So my question was on margins itself. So, because the kind of growth we have seen on the top line, so at least operating leverage should have played out right in terms of the EBITDA margin. So, as you mentioned, that because of export and domestic mix, that margin is low. But does that mean that domestic orders we are basically taking below 7% kind of margin, or also there is something else that I'm seeing?
So, not necessarily. I was only saying that the blended margin will go up only if there is an export element coming in. And if you look at in this entire revenue mix, export revenue is very minuscule in the first half. Because another element, as I was mentioning about the construction activity, there is a little less as compared to the supply portion. So the blended is looking like this. It doesn't mean, of course, there will be different projects and different businesses carrying different margins in that sense. So not necessarily that domestic is carrying lowest, and that's the reason why it is getting reflected that way.
Okay, but sir, what is the impact of this commodity volatility in overall, maybe if you can keep ballpark figure in for the first half?
First half, it should be in a range of at least 1%.
Okay. Okay, so that 1% can come back in second half, and that is a fair assumption, or maybe.
That's right. Rather, last year it was higher than 1%. Now, at least in H1, we are seeing the lower impact of that. But if that impact is still there.
Okay. But, sir, like if I see your historical margin, on a much lower top line, you were touching double digit also in some of the years. So, so entire the fall is purely because of 10% dip in the exports. I think your exports have been adverse 30% historically. So, now at 17%. So, that much impact is purely because of exports.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Because that 13%, again, I'm repeating that it is completely from the engineering side or on the equipment supply side and no construction component at all. So if that's the mix of the sales, then naturally margins will be very different.
Okay. And so lastly, as you mentioned, this difference of standalone and console numbers is because of dividend. So that dividend is from Praj IPOT or any other subject?
Praj IPOT.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Lokesh Maru from Nippon India Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. So, two questions. Number one was on other expenses. So, other expenses right now would be 20%, right? And it is more or less around the on-site charges. The on-site expenses and labor charges and travel and freight, which form major component of it. So it has been trending mostly downwards in the last 2 years, but like you, as our top line goes up, cost should remain where it is, but other expenses, which is variable in nature, should also go up in tandem with the top line. So any guidance or any comments around how would you look at this component as percent or percentage of your top line going forward and in this fiscal aspect?
So your observation is right. Mainly these other expenses, as you mentioned, are completely related from the business activity point of view, and major component of that is sitting in the project activity. So currently, if you are doing 80 projects and tomorrow if you are going to do 160 projects, absolute number will change, percentage will remain more or less in the same kind of a range, because it's almost 90% variable in that sense. Hello?
Mr. Maru, we are not able to hear you.
Can you provide how much volume were we able to do in last quarter? Like, we have the case number, but could you also provide the volume number in terms of KLPD only for the biofuel space?
No, so we don't provide this breakup. We only provide the breakup on the basis of business segment.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amish Kanani from GM Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congrats on a great execution, sir. Sir, two parts question. One is, sir, as you mentioned, exports.
Mr. Kanani, we are not able to hear you properly. Can you please switch to your handset?
Yeah. Is it better?
Yes.
So, one, you did mention exports might see some traction in the second half, at least from the order book side. If you can give us some sense of, you know, in the past we were hoping for some, you know, 2G orders from EU, but maybe, you know, the war has kind of vitiated that environment. So if you can give us some sense of whether that's happening. And in that context, you know, you did mention about Brazil, Canada and Mexico. So if you can give us some sense, where is the traction and what is the kind of pipeline or inquiry there?
So, which is as mentioning, there are driving forces in the market. So, we are clearly seeing lending mandates coming in Mexico and Canada. So the illustration was that this energy transition is a phenomena where all economies and countries are thinking increasingly in terms of being their own producers of their energy needs is something that's now visible. These are initial proof, but I think that's the first dimension. Second is we clearly see the demand emerging for decarbonized fuel more and more. And as you know, biofuels are a clear answer for that, irrespective of the mode of transport, whether it is on the road or surface or air or marine or wherever. So that's the second one. And so we believe that if you look at these mandates, energy security plus decarbonization as an agenda, then I think that opens up a completely different canvas on which the demand for biofuels across the globe starts to accelerate. In Europe, the driver is that the fact that there's a RED III directive which says they need to create capacities by 2030 for 2G ethanol. It's a mandate given. So that's the driver there. In America, low carbon ethanol, because that's how the market mechanism works, so the lower is the intensity of carbon in production of that particular fuel, the better realization it gets. So that's their driver. Brazil has introduced a renewable bio program. Right now, because of their political situation, maybe there's a bit of a gap there, but I'm sure that they'll pick that. It's not uncertainty, it's just that they have to go through the election process. So different drivers in different markets, but everywhere, clearly, energy security and decarbonization are two very, very clear drivers for driving the business.
Okay, sure, sir. And sir, post this IOC Panipat, plant being commissioned, is there any pipeline of inquiries from the domestic oil and gas companies for, say, additional plants? So I understand it's expensive, but maybe, you know, the domestic oil and gas companies would go further is a hope. But, you know, the way oil prices are volatile and their balance sheets are a bit impacted. So any sense of where the traction will be post the commissioning of this plant?
So, initial answer probably is the same as what I gave in the first case. The security and decarbonization is the driver, and this is a big decarbonization drive, right? If you go through the lignocellulosic feedstock route, that's the highest reduction of GHG footprint. So we will clearly see this trend developing. Yes, a lot of people are watching with interest the results that come out of the Panipat commissioning. We are very, very aware of that, and we are working on that. And then, of course, there will be two more projects that will get commissioned towards the end of next calendar year. In India itself. So I think that will give a very, very clear, so yes, it is a 15-month kind of a period from now, but in that 15 months, we would have actually showcased to the world of what the possibilities are, and I think that will become a very, very definitive anchor for driving this opportunity forward.
Sure. And so last question, what is the average execution of this outstanding order book, and if possible by vertical, that will be helpful. Thanks.
The outstanding order book as of September, right?
Yeah, sir. So, say 80% is bioenergy. So, what is the average execution there, sir? If it is different from vertical, that you by vertical.
So, it will be in a range of 12 to 15 months. Certain orders are going beyond 18 months, not necessarily of bioenergy. But on an average, it will be falling within a basket of 12 to 15 months.
Okay, sir. Sure. And all the best. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
A reminder to all the participants, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aman from Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Please go ahead.
So this is on the CP segment. If you can highlight what kind of equipment are you supplying, and specifically you mentioned something on the hydrogen fuel cells, etc. side. So what is the equipment, what is the exact play that we have over there?
So, Aman, in case of CPS, I was mentioning that modularization is a big offering from that business. And what they do is, given a process, and the process is not ours, somebody else's, given a process, we are able to conceptualize and engineer a plant that gets modularized so that the site work is reduced to minimum. That's a basic concept. And for blue and green hydrogen projects, that's becoming a big demand because on multiple counts, A, that many capacities are being set up. B, only a handful of companies globally have the wherewithal and technology to actually give the process licenses for these. And then we are also working with CP's business very closely with them to create the solutions. And this enables them to go on stream by reducing the site time significantly and obviously cost as well. So that's the driver for this business. And we are in a position not only for processes and technologies that are made available on this space, but as I was mentioning, also for our own ethanol 1G and 2G technologies, we are finding traction in terms of our ability to modularize the plants, which then reduces significantly the site work, and especially in the advanced market or the developed world, this is a very big attraction.
Got it. And just what would be the scale of these projects on the hydrogen side? What kind of capacities are you able to cater to?
So depending on the process path and many other factors as to is it a co-located project or an isolated project, which part of the world, what's the feedstock for them? There are many variables. I may not be able to give you a rubber stamp answer on that one. But each of these creates this opportunity depending on who the OEM is. So many factors. So I will not be able to give a robust answer. Sorry for that.
Sure. And any tie-ups which you can highlight in this space which you have done?
Sorry to interrupt. I would request you to rejoin the queue, please. There are many other participants who are waiting for their turn.
Yes. So, Aman, just a very quickly close answer. Yes, we are working very closely with several leading technology providers in the world. Our agreements do not permit me to state their name, so that I won't be able to do.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Advani from Prabhudas Leeladhar. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, Amit.
Hi, sir. This is Amit Advani. So my question is with respect to exports, as you have already highlighted a few things about it, and I think on the bioenergy side, just wanted to understand this engineering business, which is more export-oriented, as I understand, can go to what levels in next 2-3 years, and how, if at all, we have to see, let's say, next 2-2.5 years, how the business mix is going to change. And second point is on the margins. Obviously, I understand that you cannot share the nitty-gritties on that, but anything directionally where the margins are heading in each of these two sub-segments would be helpful to understand.
So just to give you answer to the second question first, if I tell you that our effort is anything but to drive it northwardly in both the segments, it will be a wrong answer. So that's what we are attempting to do. Yes, there are factors that we have to, and the challenges that we have to meet and overcome. But fundamentally, the effort is to take it northwardly in the direction. In terms of your question on the engineering businesses, probably this call is too short a duration for me to make an explanation. You probably hold our capabilities in too high a regard that we'll be able to do an elevator speech on these. Maybe that is not the answer, but maybe we can meet separately and we'd be happy to walk you through those.
Sure. And second, sir, on the competitiveness, if you could just highlight about the market share and how much premium we, if at all we are winning the awards, what is the typical gap between the closest competitor you might be facing? Yeah.
So as I mentioned, we have actually seen in this quarter our market share move up especially for the domestic business. We've moved it significantly upwards, excess of 66% now. But having said that, on how much premium we get paid by our customers, well, I don't have a fixed answer for that, and maybe I'm not the right guy to answer that as well. It is for our customers to perceive the value that we deliver and share that with us, and we are very blessed that our customers do see value in what we are delivering and are able to get our share of that as well from them.
Right. So, sir, this market share increase was because of the value product or something else? If you can just highlight anything you have to add.
What happens is that, you know, we built these plants over 3 decades now, and over a period of time, sometimes the first price may become attractive, but then the experience is not attractive, and then that's when you come back and say, no, maybe I do understand that there's a value in your experience and technology and knowledge that you deploy. And that's the phenomena that we are seeing. Probably that's the phenomena that we are seeing. People are beginning to value what we are able to deliver in difficult markets with certainties. And even if there are some, what do I call it, even if when there are difficulties, we have the knowledge and the organization will and commitment to set things right. And I think that's what is sending us in good deal.
Okay, so last question, if I may. About this, yet to be tender out 500 to 600 crore liter opportunity. I understand this will be mostly grain-based. So if you could just highlight what kind of traction, which kind of customer profile where we are seeing the maximum traction for this grain-based plant. Thank you.
So, I mean, actually, as we had mentioned in the past, the country did go through a phase where grain-based capacity creation became more significant than the sugarcane-based. But indications are, and as I was mentioning that now that we are exporting so much of sugar, so maybe this was a special year. But as world sugar supply starts to stabilize, maybe we will see a lot more sugar diversion taking place for ethanol production. So probably we will see a balance coming back. I'm not saying shifting back, but at least traveling the direction of higher share of sugary feedstocks. And when we, as we discussed in the next year, when the little solanesic plants are commissioned, maybe even little solanesic feedstocks will walk in.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prathamesh Sawant from Axis Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello sir. Good afternoon. So I have two questions. So one is regarding, now that we have launched the second generation IOL fuel plant, I want to understand what is the commercial feasibility of this 2G plant? Like, have we achieved commercial feasibility, or we are dependent on government subsidies for the thing?
So let me tell you this. So first of all, this is a global phenomena, and there are markets where it is feasible to put up a 2G based plant. Okay, as I was mentioning, in India, the ethanol 2G ethanol rates are still not specified. Yeah, and that needs to get specified, obviously, and that will determine the viability as well. We need to commission, but what's more important is to understand that this is a technology that cuts the emission by 85%. Yeah. And that no other technology can do. So when the focus shifts to GHG reduction or carbon footprint reduction, I think that the cost dynamics, because we don't have in India, at least not yet, the carbon markets, but in markets where carbon is priced and valued, it's already viable.
Okay. So our core focus on 2G front would be on the export front. Would it like to say that?
We are very clear. Our job is to create solutions for a feedstock, and wherever the feedstock is. So if we go to Nordic countries, the feedstock could be forest residues. If we talk in India, it is more like rice straw, at least. Start with, there could be cotton stock, we have to see. If it is in Eastern Europe, maybe it is wheat straw. So depending on where we are, if it is in Southeast Asia, maybe it is some or the other component of the palm tree.
Yeah, no. I mean to say that you see the market coming for this particular product in more in an export scenario, not in the domestic front as of now. Okay. Yeah, and sir, on the Kandla capacity expansion, I want to understand, can we put a number of capacity utilization on our business, as in we are at what rate are we up? Because we can see that we usually have a execution run rate of roughly 29% of our order book. So is it to say that we can see this number going above 29% as we can, you know, expand our capacities? So our revenue figures start increasing as we have a large order book already.
So Prathamesh, the existing capacity which we have already created, which has in-house and outsourced both, is good enough to take care of the current order book. The comment related to we are looking for expansion of our existing Kandla facility was meant for our export business, and we believe that we will have to ramp it up going forward. And mainly it will be required on the critical equipment side more than on a bioenergy side. Because in critical equipment, the manufacturing has to happen at our end, 100%. In the bioenergy, we can actually outsource some non-critical equipment. So that's the reason the balancing is a little different. But to answer your question, the current capacity is good enough to take care of our current order book. We are preparing for the next phase in the engineering business, especially on the critical equipment side, and that's what we are evaluating from capacity expansion point of view.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's it from my end. Best of luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harsh Bhatia from IDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you. Just on this fermentation side, when you're talking about PHS, what is the level that we can see in terms of inquiry pipeline, in terms of volume or value, anything that that you can share for the domestic market, where we are currently? And if you could provide some metrics for context, like where could China possibly be as of today or any other Western country, so that we can gauge the overall opportunity size for the fermentation side. I'm talking in terms of the pharma side for fermentation.
Mainly on the high purity side.
So I'm sorry, we're not in a position to answer the question as compared to China, because I think the industry itself is at a very, very nascent stage right now in India as compared to what Chinese fermenter capacities are. So we have to see how the industry develops. We are clearly seeing a trend by which the dialogues, as well as some specific capacities being created by especially the early leaders in the industry. So it is still very early to, probably a question is more rooted a year down the line, and that's when we'll be able to answer it in a more affirmative way. Right now, I mean, it's not that there is a clear visibility in terms of how much of Chinese capacity is either shifting or being replicated or additional capacity being created. What we're seeing is that the inquiry levels have significantly changed from very small fermenter size, which a few companies were doing, to reasonably large fermenter size to multiple companies, and that's what we are seeing right now.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sagar Kapadia from Anvil Shares and Stock Broking Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Sir, could you please elaborate in your statement, you have said comprehensive ecosystem is being set up by UP for CBG and other biofuels. Because whatever I have inquired with people, they say to get even the rice straw and other agri raw material, there is a lot of, you know, problems here. The farmers are not giving them.
So I think your question is correct, Sagar, that it has to happen. So first and foremost, there needs to be a policy which sort of encourages people to do the right thing, right? And I think that's what where the government can do. The actual action on the ground will have to be translated by industry, by pharma cooperatives, you know, maybe some more action even at state level. So what I meant to say was that the steps and the policy changes are indicative of government's desire to make this into a successful program.
Yeah.
I mean, today we are all talking about the ethanol program with such because the 2018 biofuel, national biofuel policy actually enabled that. But we have been at this ethanol for over 30 years, and we have seen that this ecosystem development does take time. We know that in gas's case, hopefully it will not take that long. But the fact is that it's also taken 4 or 5 years and maybe a couple more before it becomes a very robust operating system just the way, say, ethanol market is today. And that has to be the case and to be understood that, yes, sometimes some very new. We are not even a gas economy yet. So for our lot of other our infrastructure around that is not there. We are in dialogue with a very one of the leading automotive manufacturers, and they have a strategy to roll out engines that are gas based. But so it's a whole ecosystem that has to move in tandem and come to a minimal inflection point, and after that it takes off.
Okay, but anything you want to highlight, sir, in UP government policy? You said they are doing something which will, you know, help the setting up of plants to get such raw materials, agri raw materials.
Yes, so as I said, the policy is there now. That needs to get action on the ground. So there is a lot of push that is taking place to create predictable supply chains. This is new business. This is a new application, and I think we need to give it some time before we can get to a stable answer.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ravi Nardar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yes, sir. Okay. Sir, what is the progress on diesel blending, sir? We are developing a binder, so I want to.
Yes, that is still a project that is in progress, and. We will let you know once we are ready with it. Very soon.
Okay. And sir, and sustainable aviation fuel, when will you get the first order, I think?
It's not about getting the first order, Ravi. It's about understanding that what needs to happen. So there's still dialogue going on as to, because even if I put up a plant, there must be an agreement to buy the SAF and use it in the aircraft side. So I think we will go through that phase in US, which is the leading market in the world right now. I was there 2 weeks ago, and they do not have any capacities today, but they have said that by 2030 they want to create a certain capacity, which is still at about 5-6% of the overall market that they need the fuel for. So I think what I'm trying to share with you is that maybe SAF is a little early for us to talk about, but to in terms of setting capacities, but what we are definitely seeing is, as I mentioned, the ICAO announcement is one positive step. The US IRA program is the next definitive step. And as I am, you all know, an aircraft, when it flies from point A, it has to land at point B, and there also it needs to have the fuel availability. So it will develop, but maybe this is still a very early date.
And, sir, any order update from second-generation ethanol from Europe, sir?
So as I mentioned, that because of the war, things got a little pushed, but the heightened awareness on energy security and the need to fulfill the directives on the RED III program and the 2030, we are into very active and very advanced dialogue with a few developers in European space on 2G.
And the last question, sir, do you have any plan to buy back share or give bonus to shareholders?
Sorry.
So there is nothing on the our platter right now. This is a matter to be discussed at the board level, and if it happens, naturally exchange and people will be communicated, but right now this is not on our card.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question that the management could answer today. I now hand over the conference to the management from Praj Industries Limited for closing comments.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Thanks a lot for your time today. If you have any more questions, please feel free to write us at info@praj.net. Thanks again for your time today. Wish you a very happy Diwali. Thanks.
Thank you. On behalf of Praj Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.